NBA players testing positive for COVID-19. Does this put the league's restart in jeopardy?
And an interesting reaction from an NBA player to another opting out.
Plus, Paul George, when he was on the Pacers, says he got the top power forward in the league to join him, but the Pacers didn't want to sign him. Who is it? We'll break it all down for you in today's edition of Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know about the association. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales. I host the Locked On Celtics podcast. You find me on Twitter, at RedsArmy_John.
So we got a lot going on today, though. But before we do that, today's show is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. This is one of those days where just like news kind of comes flying out, and I have like thoughts on everything. So this is timed well, I think.
Yeah, thoughts on everything. I like it when you've got thoughts.
So I'm probably going to rant a little bit in this first segment. So let's start off with the COVID-19 news. And the big news is that testing starts basically today and tomorrow for most NBA teams. So you're going to see some positive tests coming out of this. The biggest news, probably the biggest name, is Nikola Jokic testing positive for COVID-19 while he's home in Serbia. And this comes a couple days after, you know, he was basically partying with Novak Djokovic, the tennis star, at like an event they did. And then they all went out to what looks like a club. So Djokovic tested positive this morning. Then we got the news that Jokic tests positive. And it's like, okay, I can put two and two together here. There's a report out there, a rumor out there, that one Western Conference team has four guys that have tested positive. People are kind of freaking out about this, I think. Deservedly so. No, you'd want no one to catch COVID-19. The long-term effects of this thing are so unknown and absolutely terrifying anecdotally that it could be really bad even if you get it and recover from it. So obviously this is not something that anyone is thrilled about. But if you're looking at it in terms of a perspective of the NBA restart, this is fine in my opinion. This has nothing to do with the NBA. Jokic partying in Serbia or doing whatever it is he was doing and catching COVID-19 has nothing to do with the NBA. This is why they are testing these 2 days. And frankly, everyone's saying, you know, look at what's going on in Florida, and that's separate from all this. But if you're saying that these positive tests are the reason the NBA shouldn't restart, I think it's like the opposite of that right now.
Well, I agree with where you're going with that, in that I don't think these positive tests will impact the NBA's restart, because this is why the NBA staggered it this way. This is why they started the testing on June 23rd. So they can test, get all these positive tests, figure out who has it, who doesn't. People who have it, quarantine. When you're done, you join your team. And then you go down to Florida, you do it all over again. Yeah. That's why this is the way it is. But why does this impact the restart? Why does this impact the bubble? Let me sum it up by saying these three words. People are stupid.
That's fair.
Because
totally fair.
We've been sitting here for how long saying don't reopen it so soon, and they insist on reopening. It's like, okay, fine. We're going to reopen, but wear your masks. And people are like, nah, not going to wear my mask either. Like, all right, if you're not going to wear your mask, at least don't stand on top of everybody. They're like, nah, sorry, dude, I'm going all in. And then what happens? These people partying in Serbia, guess what? Positive tests. These people partying in Florida, guess what? Spike in cases. This is all just, it's common effing sense. And as long as these people have the option of doing the wrong thing, a few of them, enough of them are going to do the wrong thing. Enough that I was thinking going in, like, I don't think anybody's going to really try to escape this bubble. Now I'm ready to guarantee that some moron is going to try and sneak out of that bubble and get popped for it.
So
no pun intended.
I don't disagree with you to an extent. I wonder if, and this is something I want to pose to you and to everyone, and I don't know if I fully believe what I'm about to say. Call it playing devil's advocate here. And it ties into what you were just saying. Like, could the NBA's bubble, which is not going to mimic real life at all. Look, they caught COVID-19 from workouts, from partying, from maybe going to the grocery store, just real life, like us in everyday life have a chance to catch this basically anytime you leave your house. Could the bubble and all the precautions are taken and the fact that it doesn't mimic real life at all potentially be safer for these players than just doing what they're doing now?
Yeah. Again, if everybody listens, that this but has
even
been
if one
my
person doesn't, you know, that's still probably less of a risk, I think, to some degree. Sure. Anyway, I don't know if sure. I actually believe sure. what I'm saying right now, but I think it's an interesting question to pose. Yeah.
I get it. I've said all along, if the NBA can do this safely, they should try it. And I think that I do believe in the NBA's plan. And I still believe at this moment that they can pull this off. Florida's numbers are spiking, but this isn't Florida.
Exactly.
They're basically, consider this the Vatican in as it applies to Italy.
I like that analogy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's its own independent little thing within the state of Florida that the rules almost don't apply to it because Disney has such control over it. It's the size of this entire Disney area is the size of Manhattan in New York. And under their control, they can keep it clean and free of all the stupidity of the 20-something-year-olds going to the bars in Miami and catching COVID. So I think that they can do it. The question of whether this bubble is at risk to me is the Disney employees that
yes.
aren't living there.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, not only are they going to put the players at risk, are they putting themselves – is the NBA being irresponsible by putting these people at risk, making them go back and forth – and exposing themselves? Is there, should the NBA step up or do something? Can they do something to put these people in a bubble as well and compensate them for it and try to make sure that they're not compromising things and their own health?
No, that's kind of was everyone's biggest question going into this. Like, we knew what some of the things were going to be, what some of the rules are, because of, as you mentioned earlier, common sense. But the question was, do the Disney employees have to live in the bubble too? I don't necessarily know if you can really force that on people, and it would probably cost a whole lot of money. And this is also why Adam Silver was saying, and we talked about this last week, that it's not about the money to the NBA because they're spending so much money to put this on, that it's about other things. You and I kind of called BS on that a little bit. So I wonder about that. Like that is the biggest thing that could burst the bubble here, is these people coming and going and them being out in Florida, which is seeing a rise in cases and all of that. That I think is all, if that's your argument for why the NBA shouldn't do this, fair, totally fair. I think that's a reasonable thing to say. I disagree with it just being Jokic tested positive, so we need to shut this all down right now. That was my larger point. But it does lead to these other questions that, look, these guys are getting it. If these guys can get it, anyone can easily get it. And then you infect the bubble, and that's when it could potentially spread with asymptomatic carriers, because that's going to be the biggest concern. They're going to check their temperatures daily when they come in. But if you're not showing symptoms of this or you don't have a fever, how do you know? And then they potentially come in contact. And we've seen how this thing just spreads like crazy.
Right. And the fact is that they don't take it as seriously. Some of these guys don't take it as seriously. If they took it seriously enough, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about at least 7 new positive coronavirus tests. Now, to be fair, I'm not saying that everybody who gets coronavirus is somebody who doesn't take it seriously. You can and put yourself in a, I go grocery shopping and, you know, who knows what happens. But the point is that clearly Jokic was out there partying and again, in the interest of fairness, I don't know for sure that that's where he got it, but we can also deduce pretty clearly. I feel like that's
I think it's an okay assumption to make.
That's a fair guess, right?
Like, yeah, Sure. Let's cover our bases from the Jokic lawsuit that's coming towards us now.
But let's go back to the beginning. Who was the first NBA player that we saw that didn't take it seriously? Rudy Gobert. Yeah. Rudy Gobert didn't take it seriously. He was over there, caressing everybody's microphones, and he's the guy that started this whole thing. He's patient zero. So even with that, guys are still not taking it seriously.
So, yeah, even with, incidents of people not taking it seriously, I wonder, though, if, the fact that you would be the dude that screws this up and the bubble in the NBA's return to play or potentially do it, that is enough of a stigma that you wouldn't want. Not even catching it being a stigma, but being, the dude who wrecks the thing type of stigma that, you're never going to live down. And that's going to be kind of your legacy in the NBA if that's the case. Depending on who it is, of course. If LeBron does it, I guess it'll be fine. But, the wrong guy doing it, that's going to be what you're remembered for till the end of time. And I don't know if any player wants that. And I wonder if, that shame is going to be a motivating factor to keep people in the bubble on campus there. I don't know. I'm not one of these people that's screaming that they shouldn't return to play. I honestly don't care either way. I think it's fine if the NBA wants to try and do this, looking at all the rules they have in place and the setup they have, again, that it's so far from real life that I think it's reasonable to try. Look, also given the money that's at stake, and that's what this league is designed to do. Yes, it's entertainment and it's a sport, but it is still a company that makes money and is designed to make money.
Can I just say that I am very, I'm very upset that we are now dividing ourselves seemingly into the don't play at all and play at all costs type. I'm seeing this divide start to happen where if you advocate, if you're saying no, I think they can try. I think this can be positive. I think they can do it. It becomes, you don't care about anybody's health and whatever. I want people to be safe, and I've said from the beginning, if they can do it safely, then do it. Because I understand the other side. I understand the money, and it's not just greed. This is the business they want. There's a lot of money at stake. There's hundreds of million dollars on both sides that the owners and the players have been that they stand to lose. So there's a middle ground to say you can do this if you can do it safely. If you can make it work. Then I think they should. But if they can't, if there's a real risk, then okay, I get it. If they turn around right now and said, you know what, it's not working, we got to cancel the season, I wouldn't be mad. I'd be upset, disappointed. Yeah. I'd be disappointed that basketball isn't back, but I wouldn't be like, oh, damn it, you idiots.
No, let's roll this into the next segment because this ties into what we had planned to talk about anyway. We can kind of keep this conversation going. But before we do that, a couple of quick things here. First and foremost, the Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice, and that's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000 to make your own donation along with us and make a greater impact. I'm a big believer in the power of the collective. Please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. Today's show is also brought to you by rockauto.com. Maybe you're just a do-it-yourselfer trying to save a little bit of money and do some work on your car, or if you're restoring an older car like I'm actually doing right now, it can be tough with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models to go into a chain store and find the part that you're looking for. It's difficult. They can change year to year. Those stores are trying to appeal to so many different people that they are not going to have the part you're looking for. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules, master cylinders, which I just recently ordered, a radiator, which I also recently just ordered, to motor oil and even carpeting if you're redoing an interior. Something gets wrecked. Whether it's your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Other websites, I really can vouch for this, make it difficult to find the exact parts you need. RockAuto.com does not. You can just, with a few clicks, find the exact part that is going to fit your car so you didn't just spend potentially hundreds of dollars on something that's not going to work for you. And best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low. And the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same part? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. All right, John. So continuing the conversation we had in the first segment here about the NBA returning to play. And I think it's interesting because we talked about this. You can kind of find a middle ground on this. It doesn't just be they shouldn't do this or they should do this at all costs. There is a middle ground. I think they're trying to hit that. And look, the players agree. One of the big pieces of news yesterday was Woj tweeting out that, as expected, which is an interesting quote, the CBA, the revisions to the CBA were agreed to. So the players and the league have agreed to this because I think they understand all the implications with this. Yes, some of it's greed. Yes, some of it's them just wanting to earn a living. But there's a lot at stake, not just money-wise, but these players' futures too, I think.
Absolutely. Like this is not just, hey, we need to make our $300 million this year. And people see that and say, oh, you're greedy. Well, you're not greedy. You want to make the money that you were expecting to make. And it's generational money. It's something that, and we look at things like, players want these millions of dollars and it's all just greed. They want this money. They're helping people. They have families. They want to set up futures for their children. They have friends. They have, some have businesses. Some have social causes like the Black Lives Matter the movement after George Floyd, that they want to make this money so they can help fund these things and help the, and also, they want to make sure that the future of the NBA is in a good place.
Like, that's, you know, a like, huge thing with this. If there's a lockout, it's going to impact the league for a decade, potentially, in how it recovers from that and how much money these players, these owners can all earn. And look, it's their livelihoods. They just make a lot of money, and that's their life. Like, we can't relate it, I think, to us, which a lot of people kind of do. They're, oh, you know, I had someone on Twitter mention to me like, oh, well, you know, they can weather this out more so than other people can. One, that's not necessarily the case given, you know, some of the spending and some of the things we've seen from guys, but it also doesn't mean they should have to if they don't need to, I think.
Right. This is much more complicated, I think. And look, this is their business. And it's the NBA's business. It's the players' business. They, the players, the owners, the officials, the people who are working, they agreed. They want to come back and play basketball. They're not doing it. They're not selling tickets. They're not putting fans at risk. They're not doing anything. They're doing this in a way that it's just them. They're trying to do it in a smart way. They're trying to get back to their business. Just like every other business out there that's trying to reopen in the middle of this, they're trying to reopen in the middle of this as well. And the return of the NBA impacts a lot of people. It impacts me. It impacts you. Like, yeah. I've been just, for me, on I write for Mass Live. I'm a Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. Well, Celtics haven't been doing anything. So what do? I end up going to the news side. Okay, great. So now I'm now a news reporter. So my job has changed. Good. Well, John, you've got a job. Thank you. I did take a furlough. So I did have to go on unemployment for a week. And if the NBA goes away, I have no guarantee that this news thing is going to stay. I have no guarantee that they're not going to furlough me again. I have no guarantee that I'm going to keep my job. We've just seen other media companies lay people off. That's just the media aspect of it.
Yeah.
There are arenas. There are people who depend on the NBA, far, far reaching. And all of us are going to be impacted. So there is a reason to try this. And it goes beyond just, quote unquote, being greedy.
No, and that's where, even though we kind of call BS on what Adam Silver said a little bit, like that's, I think, part of the reason they're pushing for this. There's so many ancillary pieces to all of this that it's not just the players and the owners in the league. There's a lot more with it. Look, even the Disney workers are going to be able to go back and work and, you know, not be on furlough or whatever it might have been before. And I don't know the specifics of all of that. So it's interesting. But also some of the players don't want to go back. And that's okay, too. You're seeing it with Davis Bertans saying, I'm in line for payday and free agency. I'm not going to do this. 100% yeah. Okay. Trevor Ariza yesterday, for other reasons, isn't going. Totally fine. But it's also interesting because you have Evan Fournier coming in and kind of shooting that idea down in a weird way.
Yeah, he was on Twitter saying, so Woj tweeted about it, and he quote tweeted saying, this is what's wrong with the NBA nowadays. And then later on, he quote tweeted Davis Bertans, who said, you know, if you don't care about the risks of playing in Orlando, then next time tag me with your opinion. He said, seriously, though, if Fournier said, seriously, though, if you think it's okay to sit and watch your teammates while you sit and watch your teammates play while you are perfectly healthy, it says a lot about you. So this really opens up a lot about pissing off teammates. And what if Orlando signs Bertans? And, you know, now Fournier and Bertans are teammates. Or what if they end up becoming teammates somewhere else? Or what if whatever, like, if I cover the Celtics, what if one of the Celtics decides, you know what, I can't do this. I can't put myself at risk. The Celtics have great chemistry. It's part of why they've succeeded. When they come back next year, theoretically better, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown's better, what if it's one of those two guys? Like, is it a
I get what you're saying. It's weird. Like, that's the only way to put it. It's a weird comment from him for something that's such a personal decision for players that, look, as much as I'm saying the NBA should go through with this for right now, if, you know, there's a big outbreak in there, I'm going to be like, yeah, they need to shut this down. And if players are not feeling safe or comfortable, it's fine. Sit out. It's okay. Look, Zion didn't want to play in this. I'd be fine with it. And I would expect everyone to kind of be fine with it. But in that Woj tweet, when he said, as expected, I thought that was an interesting thing to throw in there after, for the past 2 weeks, there's been a lot of talk about, like, oh, players are not going to do this. There's some division with the Players Association led by Kyrie Irving and all that stuff. And we talked about it. And that's a little bit interesting that all of a sudden it's like, no, this was a foregone conclusion. And I wonder if Fournier's opinion is shared maybe throughout a lot of the key people around the league. And that's what's kind of getting a lot of players to fall in line, almost like peer pressure, or again, kind of being shamed if you decide not to go and do this. But there is some news maybe that makes kind of, again, threads the needle on all of this. And that's the enhanced insurance that is going to be offered to a number of these players who, if they do get an injury or they do come down with COVID-19 and there's lasting long-term effects of that, which we don't know just yet, and it seems like there could be, they're at least going to have some sort of financial compensation that, you know, protects their future a little bit with all of this.
Yeah, that helps. That certainly helps. A guy like Bertans with two ACL injuries may still choose to, because the money is still going to be better. And, you know, it is what it is. Look, I get it. The players have this warrior mentality. It's probably why some of these players are still too stupid and going out and getting themselves, putting themselves at risk for COVID, because they feel invincible. They feel like they're, you know, they see basketball as this kind of bigger than, it's not just a game, and teammate above all else. The insurance is great, and it's gonna sway some people. It's gonna make some people feel a little more at ease. You know, I know that Jason Tatum, there was a story about him being concerned about, because he's due for a max extension this offseason. He's gonna sign a max extension, but you know, we're in this uncharted territory, and we don't know what risk he's at to hurt himself with coming back from this kind of a layoff. We don't know so much of what's going on. So this at least might ease some of their concerns and let them know that, hey, if something does happen, I'll be covered somehow. But it's such an interesting kind of battlefield, really, to navigate, a minefield to navigate, because you have your future, your money, the, like we said before, you've got your teammates, your brothers. I mean, these really are your family members. You spend so much time of your life with these guys during a season, and feeling like if they feel like you don't have their back, then that I saw it 2 years ago last season with the Celtics. If they don't feel like you've got their back, then it can really be that Jenga piece that you pull out that topples the whole thing.
Yeah, it's just a lot of moving pieces still with all of this. And, you know, no one's ever been through something like this before. There's no playbook for it all. So whether it's returning to play, trying to keep everyone safe, or the teammate dynamics that come from it, like, you kind of just got to do that shrug emoji and see how it's going to play out. And I know we don't like to be almost reactionary and results focused, and we instead want to be process focused. But in something like this, when there's no playbook of what to follow in terms of the process, you almost have to kind of be results focused with some of it all. So we're going to see where it all goes. It's going to be interesting and at least give us a ton of things to talk about. It's notable that the only player that's really come out and said something like that is Evan Fournier, and it's not really been a widespread thing. So I wonder if it's just him and his thoughts versus...
No, he's not alone for sure.
No, there's no way. But it's interesting that he's kind of the messenger on this, I think, right now. But I'd be curious, you know, it's going to, I think, to see something big with this, it's got to be LeBron, Chris Paul. But LeBron's been kind of clearly focused on playing. You've got to wonder that message has been, like, delivered to his teammates on the Lakers, especially when some of them were kind of outspoken about maybe not doing this too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the stars are going to play, although Enes Kanter did come out a few weeks ago and say, you'll be surprised, there are going to be some stars who don't want to play. So I don't know what to think. I really don't know what to think about who's going to play and why not.
It's just a wait and see thing. Like, cause again, I don't know. We have to be results focused on this or oriented because that's all we can.
I really kind of wish we had the Thursday show this week because Wednesday is the deadline for these guys to opt out, and it would have been great.
I will say this. Woj tweets out Wednesday's turning out to be a soft target date. Like, this literally just got tweeted out as we're recording. Wednesday's turning out to be a soft target date for players to opt out of Orlando unless they want to enter process to be placed on excused protected list to keep salary. Teams are largely treating July 1 as the deadline, which is when rosters of eligible players are due. So tomorrow, Wednesday, when you're all listening to this, is going to be weird. But there's probably going to be some coming out after the fact, too. So I don't know if we'll get the full thing tomorrow.
Well, hey, July 1st is the Wednesday show, so it'll work out.
We'll see how things go in a week. Again, this story's not going anywhere. So we're going to have some fun with Paul George and put on our detective hats here in just a second. But before we do that, today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is basically the best tasting protein bar ever. I think John and I will fully agree on this. I recently reordered. I know you've done it a bunch too. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They're soft, easy to chew. They're not chalky. They're not like grainy and all of that where you just want to chug down a bottle of water after you eat one of these. I've been using these as a meal replacement basically every day for lunch since I've tried these things. Got a couple different flavor profiles. 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams sugar, 3 grams net carbs, or 15 grams of protein and just 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. If you're looking for something that's basically low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, Built Bar is the way to go. These things are delicious too, aren't they, John? That's the most important thing probably.
I mean, I had to keep myself from eating like 3 of them today. So, and look, you can get one flavor. You could get the mixed box. I've got the peanut butter ones.
Those are great. I like the salted caramel too, which is like, honestly,
that's a good one too.
Like a candy bar. And the fact that this
that's a good one too.
Is good for you is totally
They're
awesome.
Delicious.
Yeah. Look, every host got a box of these to try and we all raved about them. I don't know what more you need than like 200 people screaming and telling you that these things are fantastic. So go to builtbar.com, use promo code locked on, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Again, that is promo code locked on for $10 off over at builtbar.com. They're also running a sale where they're going to put a new and improved one in, which is going to be even better than what they have now. So things are 50, 60% off. Plus they're donating all of the profits to Black Lives Matter and social justice charities. So it's a really great way to help out and try these things that you should want to try anyway. So again, go to builtbar.com, use promo code locked on for $10 off your first order. Okay, on the Players Tribune, they've got a podcast that is pretty fun to listen to, actually. I had not heard this before until Paul George went on there today and kind of dropped a bit of a bomb that's got me putting on a detective hat and looking through a lot of basketball reference stuff to kind of like figure out who this could be. And it's interesting. So he went on talking about before he requested a trade away from the Pacers that sent him over to the Oklahoma City Thunder, he had said, he goes, I'm not going to say any names. He's just going to say it like this. I had a time where the best power forward saying he wanted to come to Indy and team up with me. So that's interesting. Paul George, the recruiter right there, which I think you kind of get a little bit. And then he goes, their response was, we're a mid-major market. You know, we're a small market. We can't do it. We're a small market. We can't afford it. And this, when they said no to this idea, this is kind of what started him wanting to leave the Indiana Pacers. So, yeah, like who was this, right? That's the big thing. Also, Pacers, what are you doing? But I'm more interested in who the hell was the mystery player.
Well, just to get this out of the way, the Pacers side of it, it does show the decision-making, how different teams operate. And a team like Indiana, who is not a small market. Indy's not a small market, but like to put it as like a mid-major is fair. They could have taken a big swing, apparently, at the best power forward in the game. If it didn't work, they really don't have a fallback. And I guess from Indy's perspective, if we do this and it doesn't work, then we lose both of you and we're screwed. And we're back to like, we become like a 10-win team.
Yeah.
And then
it's a full-on teardown rebuild versus maybe retooling and getting in as the eighth seed, which for a mid-market or small-market team is a big deal.
Right. So I can kind of understand, but it does show that the difference between big markets and some of these smaller market teams, even in Indy, is big enough where you understand why big markets have advantages. Because a team like the Lakers, a team like the Knicks, if they were well run, a team in one of these big premier markets can take a swing and miss and still have like, hey, we're making enough money where – yeah, we'll figure it out. But anyway, now comes the detective work. Who, and what year was this?
So did he say which year was 2017? So free agency is where my mind went with this. It was like, who was the power forward that was a free agent there that could conceivably be called the top power forward? Like, I don't think this is like Paul George being like, no, everyone thinks this guy is number one. I think it's like a guy who's probably in the top five power forwards that you could kind of make a claim is number one. And there's really two. Hmm. You disagree here?
I would say, because I would say that my read is there was a trade that he was looking for.
See, I got free agency because – So here's my thing. No, that's interesting because the trade stuff's going to come in where we have some names that have been floated out. I jumped to free agency because it's not just that the team's small market, like the other team's got to want to trade the guy. When we bring up the name we're all thinking of here, okay, let's throw it out there. So Jay Michael, who covers the team for the Indy Star, had said it was Anthony Davis. I just don't think it's the Pacers being like, no, we're a small market. We won't trade for Anthony Davis. I think they would have traded for Anthony Davis if they conceivably could have, because at that time, Anthony Davis was in the second year of a five-year deal. This wasn't like an expiring guy. So if it's AD, like you have some time to trade for him, and you're like, well, yeah, we can try and do this in 2 or 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
Spin from Paul George.
Well, I guess the question is, I'm just trying to get the exact wording here for the for what he said, so I can see.
So here it is. So, do you want the small market wording or what he had said about like getting the power forward?
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. We're a mid-major. Okay. We're a small, like we can't do that. We're a small market. We can't afford that.
Like, unless it's you couldn't afford the pieces to trade for the guy, but like, I think my read on it was like, no, we can't pay this dude a max contract salary because we just can't have that on our books. Yes, there's a salary cap that we could go up to, but often teams have internal budgets that they've got to follow. So not all teams can actually spend you know, to the soft cap, the hard cap, or what have you. So I jumped to free agency and was like, it's got to be Blake Griffin, right? Because at the time, it made sense. The Clippers signed him to a big deal. Paul Millsap signed with the Denver Nuggets, but I don't think anyone would have put him as, like, the top power forward. So I jumped to Blake on this. But with it being reported that it's Anthony Davis is interesting, at least.
Sure. Look, Anthony Davis fits the bill. And I would say that if you did classify him as a power forward, then he would be the best power forward in the game. There are other names that could come up. Blake Griffin is certainly one that could come up. I don't think we can go much further than that. I mean,
no, it's like those two, right? Like I mean, there's not a ton of names out there that kind of like fit into this. I guess it just really depends on your read of it. Like, it's interesting that we had completely like opposite, you know, there's A and B. We chose different ones, which I think is like an interesting thing. Also, like, I get the perspective from New Orleans. Like, one, they were never going to trade him 2 years in on a 5-year deal. Like, that's just not going to happen. No. So I don't know if it's so much that they can't afford it. And I think when they're talking about it, we're a small market, that it's a financial, we can't afford it. Not, we don't have the draft capital. We don't have the players to afford that kind of player. Like, then I think you mentioned assets in there, which I get like financial dollars and cents here with the way he's phrasing this.
Right. Because if you give up the assets, then you have to restock your team. Mm-hmm. So by giving up the assets for the trade for Anthony Davis, now you have to go and spend a mid-level. You have to go and spend your biannual. You have to go and spend whatever other exceptions you can have. And at that point, the money starts to stack up, and that's what makes the team expensive. I think either way, whatever the interpretation, it's still one of these big names. Now, I didn't see it as a free agent. I didn't look at the free agent list from that year. So is it just Blake Griffin?
Yeah, basically. That's like who you're looking at. I mean, if you're going the best power forward in the league, like, you know, your names are limited here. Like, I think you could have made that argument. I don't think he was the top guy, you know, the top power forward. But, you know, I think you could have made the argument to an extent on that. And so that's kind of why I jumped to him. The fact that free agency, you know, it kind of fits the bill for some of those things. But look, I get Anthony Davis too. It's interesting that, you know, I talked about this in Locked On Pelicans the other day, that like, there's going to be so much tampering going on in Orlando. Like, look at what's going on here with Paul George from a number of years ago, talking about recruiting a guy who's potentially on a 5-year deal. Imagine what's going to go down in Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you here. I'm just looking through these lists. I'm like, I don't know who else
you can hear. You have like the detective hat on and like, okay, you have the big magnifying glass out, like following the clues.
Yeah. So if we're going through, I'm going through like the 2016-17 All-Star game rosters. This was Paul George's last year in Indy. So who on this list would be possible? Carmelo Anthony?
No.
No.
No. Or at least I hoped that's not who he thought is the top power forward.
Right, right. Kevin Love? Maybe Kevin Love?
So he made some sense. Like, Kevin Love made a little bit of sense to me on this one. And so, like, yeah, I think that's a name that's fair to throw in that.
Yeah. And that's it. Anthony Davis, I'm looking at the Western All-Star Game rosters. DeMarcus Cousins? No, he was a center.
He's a center.
So Davis would be the power forward. Draymond wasn't looking to go anywhere else. That's basically it. Kawhi, he's a small forward, so you can call him that.
Classify him there. So like, I don't know. It's interesting to see this kind of like behind the scenes thing, and then also like try and piece together. You know, Paul George didn't like make this hard to figure out really here. He's like, I'm not gonna name the person, and it's like one of three dudes, man. Like, we're gonna just assume it's all of them now. And like, the reason he wanted out of that team, a team that he had said, like, I'm here, I want to be here. And at the start of the podcast, he had mentioned that, you know, he kind of idolized Kobe. And while he always wanted to play in LA, Kobe stayed with the same team the whole time. And he kind of just thought that that's what you're supposed to do, until they were just basically like, no, we're not going to try and win. You know, we can't. And with reasonable limitations, I think. And that's kind of what changed his mind on all of this, which I thought was actually a very interesting thing.
Yeah, it really, really highlights. We talk about player empowerment. This notion, like now that it's out there, that this is kind of what happened. What happens the next time? Did Indiana get scared into the next time this happens? We might want to make that move.
That's a good question. You know,
and look, they also pulled a trade that in the moment looked bad, but actually worked out.
Oh, really worked out. Trading away Paul George worked out very well for them at the time. We were all just like, that's it. Like any other team could have gotten into this more. And, oh, yeah, look, they ended up being a very good return. So it worked out for everybody. Paul George is on the Clippers now. Maybe it didn't work out for Oklahoma City. That's who it didn't work out for.
But it did work out for Oklahoma City in a way, because it, trade that they pulled off for Paul George. I mean, they look, it's not where they want to be. But again, small market, big market. Look at all of the assets that they have. It's another rebuild. But the windows are so much smaller for these small market teams that as soon as I got to give Sam Presti the credit, as soon as Paul George said, I want to go to LA, he didn't go through this whole prolonged, oh no, rethink it, blah blah blah. So then it got out, and then he reduced his leverage. He was like, well, damn, this sucks. All right, let's do it. Boom, 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 make the trade happen. Hold LA's feet over the fire, knowing that they have a deadline to get Kawhi Leonard, and this is what's going to do it. Pulled it off. So it didn't work out conventionally how everybody thought, because the way we all think of things working out is solely by winning a championship. But considering how there are levels to this working out, I think it did work out for everybody.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, I think that's fair. Good, there we go. It's that rare, like, win, 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 win. I think that's the number of teams that are involved in this. Three wins, four wins for everybody there. So there you go. So that's a good note to end the podcast on. So I think that's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. On Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I am John Corrales, Reds_Army_John on Twitter, and I am the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you all next week. And now go tell your smart device to play podcasts Hollinger and Duncan.